Thank you for the introduction, and thank you very much for the invitation. It's been a very nice place. I had the best office I ever had. It's much better compared to Santa Barbara. All right. Yeah. So I guess we'll start with a computer game, which is called Civilization Beyond the Earth. So this game is about so human race has evolved to the point that we can colonize other stars. And then this is the technology web of the human race at that time. We have physics, you cannot see it, but we have physics, chemistry, engineering, ecology, communication. What is that? I couldn't remember that. But I want to draw your attention to this corner. When we zoom in, we find field theory and exotic matter, which will be the topic today. Yeah, it's very good to see that the general public actually knows something about our research. So the exotic matter today we're going to talk about is called symmetry protected topological space. And in particular, I'm going to focus on binary graphene system, which may be a platform to realize one of the bosonic topological phases. And if time permits, I'm going to talk about some other topics that involve information dynamics in localized system. So let's start with a very simple introduction to topological phases. So the topological phases really rise up by the discovery of topological insulator and superconductors. So right now we have many families of topological phases of fermions. For example, 1D, there's Marana wire. 2D, there's quantum spin Hall insulator. And 3D, we have bismuth selenide as a topological insulator. And helium 3B phase as a topological superconductor example. So the general phenomenology for this fermionic topological phase is that in the bulk of the system, it is insulating. Or in other words, it is gapped and non-degenerate in the bulk. However, on the boundary of the system, there will be gapless edge modes, and the gapless fermion is protected by the symmetry. So say the symmetry is unbroken, then the fermion is always gapless. That's why we call it symmetry-protected topological phase. And in general, this d minus one dimensional boundary state cannot be realized as a pure d minus one dimensional system. And that's the signature for the so-called quantum anomaly. For the free fermion topological phase, we actually have a good handle on them. We have a full classification. And we also understand the transition between different free fermion topological phases. For example, a chain insulator to a trivial insulator transition will be described by this Dirac fermion changing mass sign. And similarly, for all these free fermion topological phases, the bulk theory is just described by a gapless Dirac fermion or Marana fermion. So the interesting happens when we include interactions between different between the fermions. So the interaction can have two effects. Well, this is not exhaustive, but apparently interaction can have the following two effects. The first effect is really amazing, that the interaction can reduce the free fermion classification. For example, in 1D, we have time also symmetric Marana chain. At the free fermion level, it is Z classified. That means if we have n number of Marana chain, and each of the chain will have a zero Marana zero mode on the boundary, and each of them will be distinguished from each other. However, if we turn on interaction, then we can show actually if we have 8 copy of the Marana chain, and then we don't need to go to a gap closing procedure, but we go through a strong interaction region, the 8 copy nu equals to 8 state will be smoothly connected to nu equals to 0 state, which means the nu equals to 8 state is actually a trivial phase. So that's the effect of interaction. It can reduce the free fermion classification. And this phenomenon actually happens in different dimensions for different symmetry classes. This is in general true. And the other effect of interaction, which is really old that people understand a lot, is that interaction can make a fermionic system look like a bosonic system or a spin system. The famous example is the half-filling limit of a Hubbard model. It will just reduce to a spin model in the end. So those are about fermions. The symmetry protactive topological phase can also be generalized to boson and the spin system. The general phenomenology is the same, which means the bulk is gapped and non-degenerate. However, the boundary will be gapless, which is protected by the symmetry. But interesting for bosons is that for non-interacting boson, at low temperature, there's only one fit for the boson, which is both Einstein condensate. So for non-interacting boson, there's really no interesting, well, both Einstein condensate, it is interesting, but it's not so rich. So in order to get the topological phase in the end, we always require strong interactions between the boson or spin degree freedom. Perhaps the most famous example, a Nobel Prize winning example, is the 1D Hadamard phase of spin one chain. This is the Hamiltonian, which consists of spin one operators. And pictorially, the phenomenology for this chain is if we have a ring of such chain, it is gap and non-degenerate. However, if we have an open boundary, then there will be spin 1/2 degree freedom on the edge of the system, which is degenerate. The field theory description for this spin one chain can be written into a O3 nonlinear Seeger model with a theta term. And the O3 is the near order parameter. So higher dimensional bosonic topological phase are more complicated, but there are ways to calculate the classification and properties, so on and so forth. There are like group cohomology classification by Xiaogang and also other classification scheme like cobordism. They are more mathematical. But this talk, we are going to focus on a lattice model or Hamiltonian that can realize maybe one of those higher dimensional bosonic topological phase. So these are two examples, which is the lattice model for a Z2 symmetric bosonic topological phase. As you can see, I'm not reading the Hamiltonian here. It is quite complicated because it involves multiple spin interaction. But the general phenomenon is the boundary is gapless if we assume the Z2 symmetry is not broken. So in general, a two-dimensional bosonic topological phase, the boundary of that can be described by this 1+1D-dimensional O4 Weiss-Witten DFT with anisotropies. The O4 symmetry can be decomposed into a left-moving SU2 symmetry and the right-moving SU2 symmetry. Basically, you can map the O4 vector to a SU2 matrix, and then the left and the right multiplication will be the symmetry. In general, a lot of those bosonic topological phases in 2D can be the boundary can be understood through this field theory by symmetry breaking. For example, if we consider the boundary of bosonic integer quantum constant, which has a U1 charge symmetry, then this corresponds to we break the SU2 left symmetry completely, but break the SU2 right symmetry down to a U1 charge conservation. So in this way, we can see the U1 charge conservation has a chiral action, which will protect the gaplessness of the theory. And the previous example, the 2Z2 symmetry, can be understood further break the U1 charge down to a Z2 subgroup. So in this talk, I'm going to focus on a realistic, well, maybe realistic condensed matter system that can realize one of those bosonic topological phases in 2D. And here is our proposal. So our proposal is that by layer graphene under a very strong magnetic field with Coulomb interaction can be driven into this bosonic topological phase with a U1 charge conservation and a U1 spin conservation. So basically, the system has two U1 symmetry. The charge is conserved. And also because there's a magnetic field, and we know that spin orbit coupling in the graphene is very small. So the spin along the magnetic field will also be conserved. So there are two U1 symmetries. And the statement is that with Coulomb interaction, this system is actually a bosonic topological phase. So the meaning of the statement is twofold. First of all, we are going to analyze the boundary. And we're going to see that with the interaction, the boundary will only consist of gap with boson modes, which are compatible with the two symmetry. And the fermion modes will be gapped out by the interaction. So that's the first point. And second point, we can also consider the bulk phase transition between this topological phase and the trivial phase. And we are going to show, we are going to argue that at the bulk phase transition, only bosonic degree freedom will close gap, and fermionic degree freedom remain gapped across the transition. So let's first start from the boundary analysis. Let me remind you a little bit about the single layer graphene under a strong magnetic field. If we ignore the interaction, we know that graphene has a low energy, it's a Dirac fermion band structure, and it has the particle hole symmetry. So once we turn on the magnetic field, it will form particle hole symmetric lambda levels. And if we go to the boundary, the lambda levels will bend in this fashion. Okay, so that is the lambda level near the boundary without considering the Zeeman coupling. Each of the lambda level will be twofold degenerate by the spin. So that right now, let's include the Zeeman coupling. Then we have such a situation like this. So the red one is the spin up, the blue one is the spin down. Then if we focus on the zero chemical potential case, we will see that there will be a boundary mode, counterpropagating boundary mode. And the left moving carries spin up, right moving carries spin down. So this is one copy of the helical edge mode. Then effectively, this graphene under perpendicular magnetic field realize one of this quantum spin Hall insulator. So this quantum spin Hall. The reason for these two modes cannot mix each other is because they carry different charges under the spin. So if the right moving mode be scattered to be a left moving mode, we will break the spin conservation symmetry because the spin will change when you scatter left to right. So that's why this edge mode is stable against perturbations. Okay. So now let's continue by considering two copies of that. In the free fermion limit, we just have two copies of the helical edge mode. L labels the layer from 1 to 2. And then we can do a standard bosonization procedure. We can bosonize the two fermions into theta and phi variables using this relation here. Theta and phi, they also have two copies from layer 1 and layer 2. Then let's look at the symmetry action on those variables. We have a charge conservation symmetry because the theta variable is the same for both left and right. So the charge conservation will rotate only the theta variables. And the spin U1 will rotate five variables because the variable phi is different for left and right moving electron. And because the momentum is locking with the spin, so left means spin up and right moving means spin down. So they transform oppositely. That's why U1 spin will only rotate the five variable. And once we realize this kind of symmetry action, we can actually reorganize all the modes into a plus channel and a minus channel. The plus channel will carry all the charges. However, the minus channel will be invariant under all the symmetry transformations. Okay. And then we consider the effect of Kuhn interaction. Because we know the Kuhn interaction is a macroscopic interaction that respects both the U1 charge and U1 spin symmetry. So if we expand the Kuhn interaction into those boundary modes, it can only involve theta minus and phi minus degree freedom. Otherwise, it will break the symmetry. And if you actually expand the Kuhn interaction, it has a lot of terms in it. There are basically two types of term. One is in density-density interaction. The other type is called vortex term. And in particular, we find one vortex term, which is cosine 2 phi 1 minus phi 2. If we write it in terms of the fermion, it's a four fermion scattering term. This term will be relevant under the conditions we have. And this term, in particular, will pin the theta phi minus variable and then gap out the minus vector totally. So in the end of this the story, once we consider the effect of Kummer interaction, we only have one degree of freedom at the end, which is the plus channel. That's the effect of Kummer interaction. So what are the plus channel? We can actually write down the plus channel in terms of the fermion degree of freedom. It corresponds to an O4 vector. The first two components is the superconducting order parameter, which is the interlayer spin singlet pairing. The second two component, which is the in-plane spin density wave, which is written in this way. So the boundary effective field theory is the O4 nonlinear sigma model with a Weismann term at level 1. And the anisotropy will break the O4 down to 2U1 symmetries. So there's a naive picture to understand why the boundary cannot be gapped out in this case. That will rely on the topological response of the theory. So the Weismann-Winton term will tell us if we have a spin winding on the boundary, say the spin order parameter wind 2 pi along the boundary, then the topological response tells us we must attract two units of electron charge. And we can imagine this process of forming spin defect really, really slowly. However, the boundary still has a response to this process. The charge must be accumulated there after we finish this process. So that is only possible when we have gapless degree freedom on the boundary. Otherwise, if we have a gap boundary, a very slow procedure will not change anything. So that's the naive picture for why there's a gapless boundary on the on the system. And this gapless boundary can have a measurable effect that can distinguish the state from a free fermion topological phase. First of all, because we know the charge carrier on the boundary is not an electron anymore, it is actually Cooper pair. So if we can measure the charge quantization, say by the short noise experiments, we will measure charge 2e if we have this bosonic edge, but we will measure charge e if we are in the free fermion topological phase. Another example we can think of is we can measure the tunneling spectrum from a tip to the boundary. If there, so for this kind of bosonic boundary, we know that the fermions are gapped out by the Kummer interaction. So if we have if we measure the single particle spectrum, we will see a gap. However, if we measure two particle tunneling event, we will see no gap in the system. All right. So from the boundary conformal field theory, we can also derive bulk wave function like what they did in this bulk boundary correspondence paper. So the bulk wave function written in terms of the variables, in terms of the position of the charge and spin excitations, is related to the correlation function on the boundary. So we insert certain correlation function on the boundary, we get a bulk wave function. This bulk wave function will have a non-universal part, which depends on the distance between different particles and also depends on the Nottinger parameter on the boundary. However, there's a universal part, which only depends on, well, which has a phase factor that depends on the difference between the spin variables and the charge variables. And this universal factor is telling us that the spin and the charge in the bulk view each other as flux. And that is consistent with the flux attachment picture that people have before. And this is also the same picture as in the bulk, there's a mutual transcendence term between the U1 charge and U1 spin gauge fields. So now we finished the boundary analysis. Let's look at bulk phase transition. For a bulk phase transition between a topological phase and the trivial phase, we have a very nice picture, which is the wire construction. Let's warm up by this example of chain insulator and the trivial insulator. For a chain insulator and a trivial insulator, we know the boundary state will be a chiral edge mode. And we can align all the chiral edge mode in this alternating fashion, which has alternate chirality. Okay, then we can turn on tunnelings between the two wires. There are two limits we can think of in this case. The first case is the odd tunneling is bigger than the even tunneling. Then the 1D wires will be pairwise gapped out. We are left over with the trivial phase, which is gapped everywhere in the system. However, in the other limit, the even tunneling is bigger than the odd tunneling. All the 1D wires will be gapped out in the bulk. We are left over with one chiral edge mode on the boundary. So that describes the theory of Chen insulator. The phase transition will happen when these two tunneling balance each other, and we will get a free Dirac fermion in the end in the bulk. So similar things we can do for the bosonic theory. Right now, we align our boundary theory in this alternating fashion. So notice there are two edge modes like this, but the symmetry action for the edge mode is different. One has a spin up, the other has a spin down. And we also alternate the chirality like this. So the picture is the similar situation. When the odd tunneling is bigger than the even tunneling, then all the wires are pairwise gapped out. We are left over with the trivial phase. And in the opposite situation, we get the bosonic topological phase. So the point for this picture is that right at the transition point, when T even is T equals to T odd, because we already showed that the boundary state between our state and between our bosonic topological phase and the trivial state is a bosonic mode. So right on the transition point, only bosonic degree freedom will close gap at the transition. However, fermionic degree freedom is still gapped, still have a very, very large gap in the energy spectrum. So the back bulk phase transition is also bosonic. Yeah, so these two claims, arguments, well, the boundary analysis is exact, but the bulk phase transition is the argument. We want to calculate some model that can show us similar features that capture the same physics in here. So here is a sign-free Monte Carlo calculation done by my collaborators. So it's basically a two-layer of honeycomb lattice. And on each honeycomb lattice, we define a band structure, which is the Kim-Mengen model. So we know the Kim-Mengen model gives us a quantum spin Hall. So this is double quantum spin Hall if we don't consider the interaction. And the interaction we turn on is an interlayer spin singlet interaction. There are some simple limits we can think of. If the interaction is zero, then depends on the sign of the spin orbit coupling, we get a spin Hall conductance plus or minus 2. Depends on the sign of the, lambda. And in the strong interaction regime, we can see that each of those two sides will form a singlet. And then the total, the many body state will just be a single, will just be a tensor product of all the single state. So that's a trivial multi-insulator. So this is the phase diagram we got. It has three phases, two quantum spin Hall phase and one trivial multi-insulator. So the conclusion for our analysis is once we turn on the interaction, at zero interaction will be free from the topological phase, but once we turn on the interaction, this phase will become a bosonic topological phase. And when we further turn on the interaction, bigger and bigger, the bosonic topological phase will transit to a trivial phase. Yes, and I should also mention this interaction we designed here has a very large symmetry. The symmetry is different from the graphene model. The graphene model only have 2U1 symmetry, but here we have a SO4 symmetry, which is a symmetry that rotate the four other parameters we just talked about. So right now I'm going to look at this phase diagram along this line, which we fix the value of lambda to be non-zero, and then turn on the interaction to scan over this axis and to see what happens on both the boundary
and the bulk.
So here is the correlation function on the boundary. On the left panel is the fermion-fermion correlation function. On the right panel is the spin density wave or superconducting correlation function. As we said, there's an isofall symmetry. So those two other parameters, they are degenerate with each other. So from this numerics, we can see that, say, for a specific interaction strength, J equals 3, we can see the fermions already develop a short-range correlation. It's already exponential decay. However, the fermion, however, the bosons is still power law decay. So that means the fermions is already gap out on the boundary. However, the bosons is still gap case. So that's the indication for which the boundary only consists of bosonic gap case mode instead of fermionic gap case mode. The second thing we look at is the bulk phase transition. On the upper panel is the single particle gap for fermions, and the lower panel is the spin gap for the spin degree freedom. And we can see the fermions remain gapped across the transition. However, the bosons clearly close its gap at the transition point. At least we can see that the boson close gap much faster than the fermions in this case. Okay, so but by the previous two points, we show that the fermion gap is always finite, both at the boundary and at the bulk phase transition. And the only low energy degree freedom that appears on the boundary is bosonic, and appear at the phase transition is also bosonic. And in that way, we say that this model is effectively a bosonic topological phase at the end. So we can study the bulk phase. So this is one version of the bulk phase transition. The bulk phase transition can be described by O4 nonlinear sigma model with a topological theta term at theta. This theta equals to 2 pi will describe the bosonic topological phase with SO4 symmetry. And theta equal to 0 describes the trivial phase. So the transition happens when we tune theta from 2 pi to 0 through pi. The pi is supposed to be the transition point. So in general, this transition point is related to this O5 Weissman-Witten term by a symmetry breaking. If we start from an O5 nonlinear sigma model with a Weissman-Witten term, and we symmetry break the O5 symmetry down to an O4 symmetry, we will get this nonlinear sigma model with theta equals 2 pi. And this O5 nonlinear sigma model are also related to other interesting aspect of topological phases. For example, it can be describing the boundary of 3 plus 1 dimensional bosonic topological phase with the O5 symmetry. And they also describe a deconfined criticality transition. So in general, it's very interesting to study this kind of field theory or this kind of nonlinear sigma model with a topological term. And also we know that in lower dimension, there are many examples that the Weissman-Witten term can change the behavior dramatically. For example, in 0 plus 1D, if we have an O3 nonlinear sigma model plus a Weissman-Witten term, we get a ground stage degeneracy. And in 1 plus 1D, O4 Weissman-Witten term will give you a gap with CFT in the end. So the question is, in 2 plus 1D, what about this O5 nonlinear sigma model with Weissman-Witten term? What's the behavior of that? We want to calculate some RG properties of this coupling constant, taking account of the effect of Weissman-Witten term. So the problem here is to find the control way to do the calculation. And there are some technical difficulties for this model. For example, if we want to do a large N generalization, we must require the manifold has a non-trivial pi 4 homotopy group. Otherwise, we cannot write down a Weissman-Witten term. However, this is not true for n bigger than 4. So a large N generalization doesn't seem work. And 2 plus epsilon generalization is not work because the Weissman-Witten term must be defined in an integer dimension. So that's some of the difficulties we are facing. And we consider actually an alternate problem. It's not exactly the 05 nonlinear thick model, but it has some similar features. We consider such a manifold, which is a good Grassmannian manifold, un mod un cross un minus small n. This manifold always has a pi 4 homotopy group. So that means this manifold, we can always write down a Weismann-Newton term. And this will permit us to have a larger generalization for the problem. And this manifold will relate to the S4 manifold we want to consider in such a way. So S4 will be roughly equivalent to SP4 over SP2 cross SP2. And that is the sub-manifold of U4 mod U2 cross U2.
So do you define it as a sigma model or as a HQ?
I define it as a sigma model.
So the model is not renormalizable?
I think there's a notion called large N renormalizable. So basically, yeah, so what we calculate is actually the, I didn't show the details here. So this beta function is for the dimensionless coupling constant, which we absorb the UV cutoff into the definition of the coupling constant. It's not exactly this G. This G has dimensions. And also we did a very tricky thing. So actually we insert, so only with large N and large K is not enough to control the calculation. We actually did some small epsilon generalization, but the small epsilon is not a generalized dimension. It's actually we insert some momentum dependence to make the theory to be non-local. And in that way we will tune. So at epsilon goes to zero limit, this G is actually dimensionless.
Is there any HQ that flows to this?
Could you see again?
Is there any HQ that can be UV computational?
That I don't know. let's see.
QCD, for example, with scalar, not only an HQ coupled to scalars, might possibly give a Grassmannian.
Oh, I see. This theory can be viewed as you have some fermions and then coupled to this matrix order parameter and then integrate all the fermions, you get this theory in the end. So I think microscopically, you can start from a fermion model and then couple to those other parameters. The low energy theory will look like this in the end.
If the boson is given on a manifold, it's not going to be a normalizable.
So in general, the structure of the RG equation is actually so without the Weismann-Newton term, we can just consider this part. Mm-hmm. The structure for the renormalization for G is actually minus 1 times G plus N times G squared. And the higher order terms are also linear in N. They're not higher power of N. So in that sense, I think it's renormalizable because the G is controlled by the large N. I mean, the fixed point value is actually 1 over N order, which is not large. I don't know whether that.
There you can
complete it. Yeah. Okay. So what we find in this calculation, just basically we calculate the RG equation for this G here. Without the Weismann-Newton term, this is the RG flow, which means it had two phases. On the left, it is a symmetry breaking phase. It will flow to this Gaussian fixed point for the Goldstone modes. And then there's a transition point here, which is the Wilson-Fischer fixed point. And then the beta function for G will grow large. That is the phase of disorder. And then once we consider the effect of the Weismann-Newton term, we find that with those control parameter, this RG flow actually bend down, and there is a stable fixed point at very strong G. And this stable fixed point represents a conformal field theory, which is UN symmetric. And we get a transition between two different gapless theory. This is a gapless Goldsumo, and this is gapless disorder phase. Okay, so that's all I want to say about the transition.
Yes, sure. So in the phase diagram, at some point there was a trigger, a multicritical point.
Yeah, there's a very interesting multicritical point.
Can you say anything about that?
I think it's still an open question. What's the theory that describes this transition?
So what lives on the three lines?
On this line, it is actually a semi-metal. It is gapless. And on this line, these two lines are transition lines between the bosonic topological phase and the trivial phase.
Which are also gapless.
Which is also gapless. So this tricritical point, there are actually someone working on it, but I don't know their story.
But that is symmetry, so that's the point.
Yeah, there's an SO4 symmetry in the system. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Yes. Can it be related to this QED with two flavors?
Yeah. So you're familiar with this example. So this theory actually is due to a QED with two flavors.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to describe the transition here. The transition here is the O4 nonlinear sigma model with theta equals to pi, which is due to the QED 3 with n equals to 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then these 2 points joined together, someone is conjecturing there are actually like 4 flavors of fermions and then with gauge field, something like that. Basically, joining the two transition theory together to get there. Let's see.
So the symmetry is still on SO4, but somehow it's...
Yeah, somehow the fermions are more, there are more flavor from fermions in the gauge field at the tricritical point. Yeah, I can tell you more if you're interested in the end. So previously we were talking about this fermion to boson construction that we take two copies of the quantum spin Hall insulator and then add interaction, they become a bosonic topological phase. So this actually is not an accident. It actually has a generalization. So basically we want to generalize this idea to build a bosonic topological phase using stacking of fermionic topological phase. But the tricky question is that how many copies we need to form a bosonic topological phase. So in the previous example, we need 2 copies of the quantum spin Hall. And in general, for general symmetry and dimension, what do we need? So the criteria. So what we want to do is actually to eliminate the fermions in the spectrum of our system, and that can be done by the so-called gauge confinement. And we know that for every fermionic system, there is always a symmetry which is fermion parity. And the fermion parity is always there regardless of other symmetries. So what we can always do is to gauge the fermion parity. This is a Z2 gauge field. Once we introduce the Z2 gauge field, there will be a flux, high flux of the Z2 gauge field, which we call Y-sum. And what we want to do is to condense the Y-sum such that the fermions are confined in the system. Then we are left over with a system that doesn't have fermionic degree freedom and low energy. However, in order to condense the Y-sum must have some trivial properties. The first point, the Y-sum must be a boson, otherwise you cannot condense it. The other point is that the Y-sum must carry trivial symmetry representation. This is because once we condense the Y-sum, we want to get a symmetric phase. And if the Y-sum carries symmetry charges, then once we condense it, the symmetry will be broken in the end. So it must have a trivial symmetry action. And also it must have a gap, a non-degenerate spectrum. There may be some cases that a Weisson has some local degeneracies. And once we condense the local degenerate Weissons, we may end up with a gap theory in the end. Remember, what we want to consider is a bosonic topological space which is gapped in the end.
What's the relation between having local degeneracies and gapless result on the equation? Not following.
So naively speaking, if you condense a degenerated object, then in the end, the system will be massive degenerate, right? And the massive degeneracy may be lifted by some quantum fluctuation, but still we will expect there will be some low energy mode in the spectrum. Is that clear?
Yes,
it's not a very strong connection, but what I'm saying is that once we have some degenerate spectrum in the Weissons, then you condense the Weissons everywhere, then the ground state may carry those degeneracies. So the ground state may be massive degenerate.
I mean, saying that it has non-degenerate spectrum means that there are many quasi-particles which you can call Weissons.
This will be clear in the next slides. Yes, I'll just finish here. So this is the two criteria to condense the Weisson. And if we can do that, then in principle, we can get a bosonic phase in the end. But the tricky thing is for fermionic topological phase, the topological effect will also always drive the Weisson to be non-trivial. For example, if we want to consider this P plus IP superconductor, which is the chiral phase with chiral at central charge 1/2 on the boundary, and we want to turn it into an E8 state, which is a bosonic integer quantum Hall state, which has a gap in the non-GDR ground state and only bosonic excitations. And this has the chiral central charge 8. So then we consider the pi flux of this P plus IP superconductor. We know the pi flux of the P plus IP superconductor will carry Marana 0 moles. So that's the local degeneracy I'm talking about. And this is a non-abelian anion in the box. Once we can consider condensation of this non-abelian anion, we don't know what state we get in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So fermion SPT,
this
you
is
just see is zero, which means if you gauge fermion,
yeah, this is
the
actually it works in general, not only SPT. This is actually a chiral case.
Maybe I missed the original question. You were asking, the original question is how can you construct a sonic SPT from fermionic SPT?
Yes.
But by definition, fermionic SPT, C is always zero, by Chauvin's definition.
Yeah.
And then, but in that definition, if you gauge fermion parity, it turns out that the topological order, the Weisson you get is basically the M particle in toric code.
Yes.
So there is no such problem in this. So maybe you're asking.
So there are two parts. Here is an example that is not exactly SPT. It actually is so-called the invertible topological order by Xiaogang's standard. But I want to show that this kind of construction also works for this class. And for the class for the fermionic SPT that you refer that doesn't have central charge, say the quantum spin Hall system we use in the graphene example. In that case, when you thread the pi flux, what you get is actually the pi flux will attract charges of the U1 symmetry. In that case, it's actually the second, it actually carry non-trivial symmetry representation, and that will break the symmetry once you condense it. These are two general statements that not only work for SPTs, also works in general topological phases.
So it is gap to non-general. I just think that the Weisson is a self-boson which
yes.
fuses to that entity.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So then let's consider two copies of that. Two copies of that is basically equivalent to an integer quantum Hall. However, if you have an integer quantum Hall thread pi flux, you will attract half charge, and that half charge associated with the pi flux give you a Semyon statistics. So the pi flux for these two copies of B plus IP actually is a abelian anion, which is not a boson. And we can see from this factor here, we actually need 16 copies of the same system. And once we have 16 copies, then it can be a trivial boson in the end. And then we can safely condense the trivial boson to get the bosonic topological phase in the end. And also, in a more mathematical term, the boundary gravitational anomaly, here we have central charge 8. And we also need to match the central charge 8 in order to get the topological phase, in order to equip these two states.
Usually when you condense something, you're left over with something with a symmetry, right?
With what?
With a symmetry.
With a symmetry.
Well, usually condensation is something that you can reverse. Right? Condensation is not an irreversible operation.
Yes.
So what is it to do on the Yates state to go back?
I mean, you want to somehow decondense, or?
Yeah, I mean, usually the anion condensation is reversible. This one, when you condense some tissue.
I'm not sure what you mean, but if we, so what exactly do we want to do for this system?
So usually if I take a topological theory,
yes,
a 2+1-dimensional,
yes,
topological phase,
right,
which has a particle, an anion that you condense, the result is a topological theory with a Z2 symmetry. Eisen tensor bar, that's the color of the fermions.
Uh-huh.
You go to the toy code, just a symmetry changing Eden and E and N.
I see.
And vice versa, if you gauge that symmetry, you go back to the.
I think in this kind of model, there's also basically it's a 16 copies of the T+IP.
Yes.
The topological order is the same as particle. Except you have C equals A.
Okay.
So if you gauge fermion parity, there are four excitations, the original fermion,
yes,
and the bison, which you can call it M, and the combination of them.
Right.
And the statistics is exactly the same as particle. Now he is trying to condense the M particle.
Okay.
Then effectively, yeah, the M particle is the bison.
Okay, so okay.
So
if you condense
that,
it comes to
you. Yeah, effectively then you have some D2 symmetry.
Yeah, so
okay,
that D2 symmetry is restored by the condensing of bison. Well, we already gauge it.
It becomes trivial. Okay, that's trivial.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you think this start from a Z2 toric code and then condense the Y-sign, it means condense the M particle, you get a confined phase for the Z2 sector. Yes. So that's an example in 2D. So we check the consistent. And then we can also do this construction in 3D. So for 3D, we have example for with time reversal symmetry. This is 3D Higgins 3B phase, which is a topological superconductor. And what we want to get is, in the end, we want to get a bosonic symmetry protected topological phase, also with time reversal symmetry. So the problem in 3D is once we gauge it with fermion, gauge the fermion parity and then turn on the Y-sons, the Y-sons is no longer a point particle, they're actually vortex lines. And what we can do is actually start from the free fermion problem and then project everything onto this vortex line and then solve the theory on the vortex line. And what we will find is that on the vortex line, there will be a counter-propagating Marana mode. And this counter-propagating Marana mode is precisely protected by the time reversal symmetry. Basically, the time reversal symmetry will require the mass term or backscattering between the Marana mode to be precisely zero. So that's one copy. And one may think that we turn on multiple copies of those in S3B phases, then we can find the mass term that can gap out the spectrum at the bilinear level. But the problem is that there's no uniform term, no uniform time reversal symmetric term that can totally gap the Majorana modes along all directions. What's the meaning? So you may find a term that is uniform in the space that gap out the Majorana mode along this direction. However, when the Weissmann mode, when the Weissmann line turn direction, like right now it's y direction, but it turns to the x direction, then this uniform term will not gap the x direction Majorana mode. So that's the tricky part. We cannot find, at least at the bilinear level, we can check every term we have. We cannot find a uniform term that gaps out the Weissmann mode at every direction. So in order to gap out the Weissmann mode, what we want to do is to introduce some interactions. So bilinear level cannot do it. We can only do it by interaction. And we already know that for this is very similar to the 1D heat hive chain at the transition point. And we know the transition point can be gapped out by interaction only at 8 copies. So when we have 8 copies of a Majorana, gap is Majorana mode, and then we turn on some specific four formula interactions, that will gap out the whole Majorana line. And that's why we need 8 copies of the system in order to form a trivial Weissmann loop. And once we form the trivial Weissmann loop, we can condense the Weissmann loop, and this becomes a bosonic topological phase. So 8 copies of Higgins 3B phase will be equivalent to the time reversal invariant bosonic topological phase in 3D.
There are two.
Yeah, there are two. I think we get ETMT in the end. That's the one.
Okay.
Is it obvious that there is a unique way to condense Weissmanns?
So there are actually two ways to condense Weissmanns, right? It depends on, there's some sign structure associated with the Weissmann. And I remember one of them is correspond to ETMT, the other one correspond to EFMN, if you know the jargon. I guess the point is that we can get both phase at n equals to 8. It depends on how you project out, which sector you're projecting out in the end. So it's both ETMT and EFMF, depends on your choice of Weissmann condensation. Yes. Okay. You have a question? Okay. So to summary for the first part, maybe. Okay. For summary, then what we propose is a bilinear graphene with a strong magnetic field under a Kuhn interaction can be an effective bosonic topological phase. And the transition between the bosonic topological phase and the trivial phase can be an exotic bosonic transition. And this constructions that build bosonic topological phase from fermionic topological phase is actually general in any dimension for different symmetry groups. I'm not sure, should I go on or just stop here? I can just stop here and then.
I mean, this hasn't quite been an hour yet. You've got another 5 minutes, I guess, because you started late.
Okay.
And how much time do you need?
Maybe just 10 minutes. So. No.
That's acceptable. Yeah, okay, I guess you can go.
Okay, so the second part is actually can consider the information dynamics. It's a little bit, it's very different from the first part. The first part consider the ground state property of a quantum system. This is considering the dynamics of a quantum system. So what we want to consider is this so-called out-of-time correlation function. And what's the physical meaning of the out-of-time correlation function is how the information propagates in the system. So we can consider such an object. W and V are some generic operator in the system, generic local operator in the system. And then we consider the time-evolved operator W commute with the V operator. So we know that once we time-evolve W operator, the support of the W operator will grow with time. And then the information will propagate. And once the propagation reaches V, then this commutator will pick up expectation value. So this C will grow when W reaches V. And the C has a simple relation with the out-of-time correlation function in this way. It's a constant minus the real part of the out-of-time correlation function. That means that the out-of-time correlation function will decay when this W reach V. So this is the generic behavior of the out-of-time correlation function. In the, at the beginning, I have a constant part, and then at specific time, it will decay. And we call this starting time of decay scrambling time of the system. The scrambling time will usually depends on the distance of the two operators. And the conjecture for the ergodic system or thermalized system is that actually the information propagate at a constant speed. So this scrambling time will be linearly proportional to the distance between the two operators. So what we want to consider is a different question. We want to consider the out-of-time correlation in a non-chaotic system, which means specifically, we want to consider the out-of-time correlation for many-body localized system. We know that for many-body localized system is secretly an integrable system. We have a local integral motion, so local integral formation like this. So the localization problem starts from Anderson, which we study free fermion localization. And in the free fermion localization, we can find this local orbital. And the occupation number of the local orbital, it is the local integral motion in the Anderson insulator. They are localized in the real space. So that's the local integral motion. And once we include the interactions, there will be interacting strains between the local integral motions because the wave function overlap. And turns out this picture also applies to spin system. In many of the disorder spin system, you can also, if it is in the MBL phase, then we can also write down this ideal Hamiltonian that consists of local integral motion. And each of the local integral motion will commute both with the Hamiltonian and with each other. And the universal property of this in MBL phase is that the interaction between two integral motion will have this exponential scaling between the distance. That's because the two integral motion have an exponential decay tail, and then they overlap to get this interaction. Okay. So if we look at this Hamiltonian, it's really easy. It's like a Hamiltonian with just Ising variables. And from this Hamiltonian, we can see the every eigenstate can be written as a tensor product of the eigenvalues of the eigenstate of the local integral motion. Here we simplify by a plus or minus line. In general, it can be multiple eigenvalues. And we can see this eigenstate has this tensor local tensor product structure, which is like a ground state of a local Hamiltonian. And in particular, if you measure the ground state, if you measure the entangled entropy for every excited state, they all form this area law, which is different from a thermal system. So every excited state behaves like a ground state of a local system. And that brings us the notion of excited state quantum order. So because the every excited state is like a ground state, so any order that can exist in the ground state can also exist in the excited state of the spectrum. So this is called the MBL protected quantum order. It can be symmetry breaking. It also can be SPT order. Then we can consider some examples. like the example of transverse field Ising model or disordered Majorana chain, there's a parameter we can tune that we can have different properties of the many-body localization. In one parameter region, we can have a paramagnetic many-body localized system, which doesn't break any symmetry. And in the other region, we can have a spin glass phase, which breaks the Z2 symmetry. And those Z2 symmetry breaking and Z2 symmetry preserving states can all be localized in every eigenstate of the system. And then the question is asked, what's the transition point here? We can tune the parameter to go through one phase to the other phase, and what's the transition point? It turns out the transition point, we call it marginal many-body localized system. And in the transition point, the quantum criticality is actually localized in every excited state of the spectrum. In particular, what we can measure is the Edward Anderson correlation function. And in usual MBL system, they will decay exponentially. However, if you measure this correlation function right on the critical line, what you will find is a power law decay. Of course, you need to sum over all the disorder configurations. And the other thing is that we can measure the entangled entropy in 1D system. We have 1D disordered Majorana chain right on the critical point. Then we can measure, we can see the entangled entropy actually has an logarithmic scaling, which is also an indication of quantum criticality. And the important feature for the marginal many-body localized system is that they can still be represented by this local intergroup motion form. However, there are rare events which is written on. So the intergroup motion, some of the intergroup motion, very few of them is written on. And the very long integral motion, the single particle energy for very long integral motion actually is related in this way. So LA is the size of the very long integral motion, and then epsilon A is the energy associated with this integral motion, and they too can be related in this way. That usually comes out from the real space RG calculation. So here is a particular example that we consider, which is a disordered spin 1/2 chain. So we have XX, YY, and ZZ coupling, and each of the coupling will be random. So we have exact Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. And there are several phases of this model. This JX tilde, GY tilde, and GZ tilde are the disordered strings for all those couplings. And then we can see for very strong JZ, we have a very big, we have a constant Anderson correlation function, which means here it is actually a Z2 symmetry breaking phase. This is Z direction spin glass. This is X direction spin glass. And this is Y direction spin glass. And between those spin glasses, there are actually transition lines. And those transition lines realize the marginal many-body localization. And we can actually measure the correlation function and the entangled entropy along those lines. They are power law decay, and the entangled entropy will have a logarithmic scaling. OK, so then we calculate the out-of-time correlation function on those three points. Right? This is the spin glass point, and these two points are the marginal many-body localized system. So this is the result. So the color plot, red means the amplitude of the out-of-time correlation is order one, and the blue means it's order zero. On the y-axis is the logarithmic of time. On the x-axis, this is the distance between the two operators. And this column is showing the scaling when we use the x-axis as the square root of the distance. Okay, so we can see for this point, we can see that the out-of-time correlation function, the scrambling time is actually, the log of the scrambling time is actually linear with the distance of the operator. And in the other case, in the marginal Mandelbrot Wolfhuis case, we can actually see that the logarithmics of the time scale with scale linearly with the square root of the distance. So that's two very different behaviors, and that can be understood quite simply by this picture, by this argument here. So the out-of-time correlation function actually is capturing the defacing of the two operators. And the defacing of the two operators, I care about the operator that connect these two operators together. And for Mandelbrot Wolfhuis system, the operator that connect these two, U and the W operator, is actually an interacting term. An interacting term that involves two integral motions, one near W and the other one near V. And the energy scale associated with that operator, that interaction, is actually exponentially small with the distance. And that's the energy scale sets the defacing between V and W in the Mandelbrot Wolfhuis system. So the scrambling time will just be 1 over the energy scale, which is exponentially large with the distance. However, for marginal Mandelbrot Wolfhuis system, we know there are very long integral motions. And those non-integral motions, single body term, can actually connect W and V. And we know that those non-integral motion has an energy scale with the distance as a square root of L. Then the time will have a square root of L dependence on the distance. Yes. So we can see that the information scrambling for many body Wolfhuis system is actually an interacting effect. If you only have Anderson insulator at free limit, the out-of-time correlation function will be a constant. However, if you turn on interaction, there will be an exponential large light cone. In the marginal many-body Wolfhuis system, it actually is a single-body physics. And if you add interactions, it doesn't change much. The scaling is still square root of it, square root of L. Maybe the coefficient will change a little bit. So that concludes my second part. We'll see that the out-of-time correlation function has a very slow light cone behavior in the localized system. And in marginal Mandelbrot Wolfhuis system, we actually find a stretched exponential dependence on the distance, which supports the statement that quantum criticality will actually enhance the scrambling of information in quantum system. Yeah, with that, I thank you for your attention and sorry for being a little bit longer. Thank you very much.
So at the critical point, the second part, you said large, rare but large operators dominate. So I wonder how rare are they? So for operators of size L, how many are there? How does it scale with them?
Yes, so usually when people do this, real space RG for say one-dimensional transverse Ising model or Marana wire, so they calculate this correlation function between two Marana, say. And there are two parts. The first part is the typical part. And the second part is the real part. And there's a probability for the real part to happen. And then this is one minus the probability. So usually the typical part will be exponentially small in distance. And the real part, because the real part is really you're having a singlet pair between the two operators. So the real part correlation function will be one. However, the probability is actually 1/distance². So what I'm saying is that the probability to have a real event that is as long as x, the probability will be 1/x². It's a parallel decay probability.
Integrable
motion. Yeah, number of integral motion that has length L It's a proportional.
It's power law, only power law.
Yeah, the power law suppression. And that's why we can get a power law Anderson correlation function. So those power law decay is purely dominated by the rare event.
And that explains the power law.
Yeah, this power is, yeah, I think it's universal. Let's see what it depends on. I couldn't remember what it
is. Is it one for the transfer size? Transfer field.
Yeah, I think for transfer size model, it's two.
Two.
Maybe. No. But this result is known.
Is there any difference between the physics at the point just in the middle of the diagram and the
this
below?
Point?
Yes. Any special going on in the one in the middle? It's a sort of multi-critical.
Yes. So actually, if you measure this Anderson correlation function, at this point, the exponent will be the same for both x, yy, and the zz correlation function. Their exponent equal to each other, but once you move away from that, the zz correlation function will still be power law, but the power is different from xx and yy.
And it's very continuously?
Yeah, very continuously when we move from.
There are no further questions. Thank you again.
Thank you.